Dave here.
And Larson.
And welcome back to Going In Raw Countout, the greatest countdown show right here at youtube.com/ Stephen Larson, available wherever fine podcasts are. If you're on one of those podcast apps, be sure to leave a little rating and a review for us. It really helps boost the profile of the show.
We're on Spotify, too.
Yeah, now we're on the Spotify. Wow, that was sudden.
Yeah.
We've been on there for a week, and I'm still processing
But welcome. A welcome change.
Welcome to Spotify.
Yeah.
Atlantis.
Oh,
it's not. You trimmed it, so it's not as effective now.
I know.
All right.
I trim my beard.
When it grows out,
yeah,
you have the face that can say Atlantis.
You know me. I only like to cut my hair, trim my beard maybe once a month. So give it time and it'll come back.
You got 30 days and I'll...
All right.
Yeah. Anyways, if you're on YouTube, be sure to hit subscribe, notify. We're also on Patreon, patreon.com/ Stephen Larson. It's a fantastic way to kick us a little bit of money, help support the show, and in return, you get stuff. It's kind of like a subscription service for cool going in raw friendos. You can either watch this as a live stream. We have this comic book with these stickers, the Friendo Care Package. I'm sending a bunch of those out. Yeah, it's right there too. It's really fantastic. Check it out. We have a bunch of reward tiers based on how much you would be subscribing to our Patreon for.
Yes.
We're also at prowrestlingtees.com/ going in raw. I'm still wearing it because I'm still in shock. I've been wearing this all week, this shirt.
I am too.
I think I'm going to actually wear this. So we're like, we're recording this on the first day. We're actually shooting this
Tuesday.
But I think I'm going to wear this for the recaps also this week.
Are you going to wash it in between?
Probably not.
You.
No, but I'll take it off when we're done. So like we have like a 4-hour
slightly work. Better.
A little bit better. I'm not going to wear it like overnight. I am going to take it off when we're not filming.
Okay. Are you going to work out while wearing that shirt?
No. That's right. Definitely a distinct line.
Good. Good. I'm happy.
Me too. I'm happy too. Anyways, this past Monday on Monday Night Raw, we saw an epic, historic performance in the Gauntlet match. Everybody's talking about it. From one Seth Rollins.
Yes.
And it sort of prompted us to ask ourselves, was that the best performance in Monday Night Raw history? In order to answer that question, we have to stack it up against other epic performances.
Yes.
That's what we're going to do
without
today.
We thought of 10 of them. Mm-hmm. And of course, when we think of 10 things, we put them in a list and make a show out of it.
Now, there's kind of a difference to talk about our qualifiers here.
Yeah, this is different than our usual qualifiers, which are being good, legacy, kayfabe.
Yeah, this is mainly the first one, just being good.
Yes.
And this doesn't...
Well, legacy is a part of it, because some of these matches, looking back historically, proved to be significant.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Historical context is definitely a thing. I will say this, though. This isn't necessarily... So, these are the greatest sort of individual performances,
yes,
if you will. So, for example, we watched Jeff Hardy versus Undertaker, because a lot of people were talking up about that.
Yes.
Really fantastic match.
Yeah.
Didn't really make this list, though, because it didn't really stand out as like an epic performance from either one competitor. It was more just a really good story that was being told.
Yeah. And a lot of these matches, either it's a really good in-ring performance by one of the competitors, or in one case, both. Or it's wrestlers fighting through injury or near injury.
Yeah.
Or it's just a moment that made a star of somebody.
Right, exactly. But there was a couple that we took off that we had possibles for the list. One of them we took off also was Daniel Bryan versus Bray Wyatt, that cage match.
Yeah.
While it was a fantastic story moment that got everybody buzzing, in terms of performance-wise, like it wasn't like an outstanding
performance. Well, it didn't happen during the course of a match. Wyatt and Daniel Bryan lost to the Usos, mm-hmm. and then afterwards,
yeah.
where Daniel Bryan left the Wyatt family.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, here we go. Number 10.
10.
Finn Balor. This was his debut main roster episode.
Yeah.
For the number one contendership against Roman Reigns on July 25th, 2016.
Hold on. Let me run down this card. This is the first Raw, I believe, after the draft.
That's right. This is the complete rebrand, so everything looked brand new. Yeah.
So, let me give you the rundown of this card, because it's actually, in hindsight, really good. Another episode we should do at some point is top 10 episodes of Raw ever.
Yeah, that'd be great.
This would be a contender. First match was Finn Balor defeating Cesaro, Rusev, and Kevin Owens. Remember, there's two Fatal 4-Way matches. Mm-hmm. The winner of those matches would face the main event, number one contender for Universal Championship.
And to kick off the show, the entire roster was on the stage as I think Stephanie was addressing them, saying this is a new era. This is also coming hot off the heels of Roman Reigns's
punishment.
Return from punishment?
Yes.
Or did he...
No, this was after he served a suspension.
After he served a suspension.
For a wellness policy violation.
Right.
He came back. And so, of course, when he's involved in this, we all think, all right, he's going to win. Mm-hmm. But then at Money in the Bank in June, prior to this, he had lost clean to Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
And I believe the pay-per-view following that, he lost his battleground, I think, a triple threat match between Dean, Seth, and himself for a WWE champion, and that was after the draft. So Dean, who was a champ leaving Battleground, went to SmackDown.
Yeah, and the pop that Finn got, they really treated Finn like a major star coming out of the draft. He was drafted from NXT to Raw at, I think, number five or something like that.
He did not make an appearance at the draft at
right,
all.
Right, yeah, exactly.
This is his first appearance on the main roster. Remember that part where he was on the stage and Stephanie's addressing various superstars, and talk turns to him, and he kind of steps out from the second row with his jacket. And
he looks cool,
so cool.
Heck. Yeah. And everybody kind of looked at him, and he was like, yeah, he's the man. But anyways, yeah, he went through two matches.
Yes.
Two fantastic performances. The first, like you said, the Fatal 4-Way. Run down the rest of the card.
Second match, Nia Jax defeated Britt Baker.
That's interesting. I had no idea that was one of her jobbers.
Yeah, I didn't know either. Third, Roman Reigns defeated Sheamus, Chris Jericho, and Sami Zayn, the second Fatal 4-Way match. So set up Balor versus Reigns main event. Neville.
And I do remember live tweeting this and everybody freaking out because they're like, oh man, they're going to job out Finn Balor. And I was like, there's no way they're jobbing out Finn Balor in his first time out.
Neville defeated Curtis Axel. Sasha defeated Charlotte to win the women's championship for the first time.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, that's huge.
Braun Strowman defeated James Ellsworth.
It's
a pretty monumental episode of Raw.
No kidding.
Cass and Enzo defeated the Shining Stars.
Okay.
And then the main event, Balor defeating Roman Reigns.
Yeah. And it was fantastic. Just an absolute star-making performance. You knew from the very second he got there. And when he beat Roman Reigns, I remember having it in my head, he's totally going to win that Universal Championship. He's going to be the first Universal Champion. Mm-hmm. And it turns out he was. He totally was.
He won. But and it was only a shoulder injury that kept him from having, hopefully, a pretty memorable run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was really cool. Yeah, Finn Balor in that first episode of Main Roster Raw he was on.
Yes.
Number nine. Roman Reigns. Speaking of Roman Reigns, about 6 months or 7 months before his punishment United States Championship run.
He was in a WB title program with Sheamus. Of course, the WB title was vacated at Survivor Series 2015, or before Survivor Series 2015. There was a tournament after Seth Rollins blew out his knee. The finals was Dean Ambrose versus Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns won, but then Sheamus came down, cashed in his Money in the Bank briefcase, beat Roman Reigns the title. So at this point, of course, we were well into this Roman Reigns experiment. Divided crowds, a lot of boos, a few scattered cheers when he would arrive for his matches. It was just earlier that year, I believe, that Roman Reigns won the Royal Rumble in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
The building this match happened. His match against Sheamus. So a matter of 11 months difference.
Yeah.
It's 11 months later, on December 4th, 2015, that same city, which booed not only Roman Reigns, but The Rock out of the building after Reigns won the Rumble, cheered Roman Reigns beating Sheamus for the WWE Championship in the main event.
This was the most over I've ever seen Roman Reigns. Yes. And he was insanely over because, and we've referenced this before back then especially, it was 48 hours of perfection booking for Roman Reigns. Because I think when Sheamus cashed it in, right after that, Triple H came out and Roman Reigns wrecked the crap out of him of frustration.
I believe there's another paper. Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Yes, I think this is a week after Survivor Series.
Okay. And that's when everybody finally was like, oh, my God. This is the Roman Reigns we want to see. Like, Triple H's out there telling him to calm down. And they had this problem with Roman Reigns where he would just kind of sometimes fade into the background and other people would sort of hog the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
And we never knew if that was intentional, if that was just him not sort of forcing himself on situations. I don't know what. But when you finally saw him reach his breaking point and destroy Triple H multiple times over, it was a sight to see. And then there had to do something with, I think, McMahon.
Yeah,
was
this
like,
match he punched Vince.
Yeah, okay, this is the match where he punched Vince.
Vince step up on the apron.
Yeah,
that's right. A Superman punch.
Oh, and it was great. It's like, this is, because it was so reminiscent of like the top, you know, babyface that we all remember so well.
Stone Cold.
Yeah. It was the most Stone Cold thing he's ever done. And of course, it got him over huge.
Yep.
He ended up beating Sheamus for that championship. And like you said, the same building he was booed out of. They, you know, lavish praise
on him.
Huge
pop.
Yeah, big time. So, and it was a fantastic performance. He finally sort of understood what he was supposed to be. And then for some reason, they just completely.
Yeah, it was shortly after this, he started fading to the background again. They started pairing up with Dean Ambrose on a regular basis, hoping to get Reigns over thanks to his association with Dean, who was extremely over at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And he again just kind of faded to the background.
Yeah. Number eight.
Eight.
Sami Zayn. This was one of the best things about John Cena's U.S. title open challenge.
Yes.
Was who was going to come out at that time? I think, was this before or after Kevin Owens?
Before.
This is before Kevin Owens. Sami Zayn answered the challenge and had just an absolutely stellar match.
But here's another thing to consider. This happened on the Raw on May 4th, 2015. Here's another thing to consider here. He did it all with an injured shoulder.
Yeah.
While he was making his entrance to the ramp,
mm-hmm.
he, I think, dislocated his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wrestled this entire match, which was phenomenal,
mm-hmm.
with an injured shoulder. He was out of action, I think, for like 8 months because of this injury.
Yeah.
And yet he managed to put on a stellar effort against John Cena. They worked the arm injury into the story a little bit. Fantastic match. And you mentioned this is a series of great matches that Cena had during the U.S. Open Challenge. Mm-hmm. He had one against Neville, I believe. He had one against Cesaro. The whole series against Kevin Owens was great.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, this is really Sami Zayn, his first appearance on the main roster. He made himself a massive star. Bret Hart came out, introduced him because they were in Canada.
I totally forgot that part. That's hilarious.
And a huge star-making performance from Sami Zayn. He was already incredibly over in NXT.
Mm-hmm.
But between the circumstance, Bret Hart, Canada, the performance he put on against John Cena made him seem like a huge star immediately, which was great for him. Sadly, he hasn't been booked nearly as well during his WWE tenure since this moment. But I would say it's either this or his first victory over Kevin Owens, I think, at Battleground the following year.
Yeah, that was a star match.
Those are two highlights of WWE career thus far.
Yeah, I think they're kind of booking him a little bit better now on SmackDown. That he's taken,
at least interesting.
He's taken sort
getting
of
some wins.
The lead heel role from Kevin Owens. I'm at least interested to see where that goes.
Yes.
As opposed to for a very long time, he was sort of treading water.
Yeah.
Number seven.
Seven.
Sasha Banks. This came in a match versus Charlotte. Of course, they had an epic rivalry all throughout 2016. Was it all throughout 2016 or starting?
It was the second half of 2016.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah, yeah. They had like a series of matches that were just fantastic. This is a Falls Count Anywhere match where like it was brutal. It was physical. There was a little bit of it that was kind of clumsy, but they were giving everything they had. This was the main event of Raw.
It felt like a real fight.
November 28th. It felt like a real fight. And it culminated with her putting Charlotte in a bank statement. Like wrapped through
a guardrail in the audience.
Oh, that was fantastic. It was such a great visual.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this was also a lot of people criticized this. I was okay with it. The title was a little bit of hot potato.
Yeah.
It was changing hands quite a bit.
You look back in the Attitude Era, that happened all the time.
Oh, I know. I know. Every Raw, there'd be like another.
Yeah, yeah, or at pay-per-views, the title would change hands a lot. Like The Rock's longest reign as champ was like 75 days.
Yeah. Yeah,
you didn't have a whole lot of 300-day reigns back in the Attitude Era.
Right, exactly.
They were using the belt to advance story, and I think they developed a lot of great stories out of this feud that still persists today. The idea that Sasha can't defend the title persists to this day because of this feud. Because she'd win the belt, and then the following pay-per-view, she'd lose it.
Yep.
So maybe in a year or so, that's the story beat that's going to come up, and she will eventually either win the belt at a pay-per-view or successfully defend it, whether it be at a pay-per-view or an episode of Raw.
Yeah.
This feud made an absolute star out of each competitor, both Sasha and Charlotte, on the main roster. And it led to the first time the women main evented a pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm. Hell in a Cell. Yeah. This was my personal favorite match out of any of their series. I thought this
Hell
was
really in
good.
The Cell would have been if they had actually had Sasha win.
The finish of that match also was like really weird.
Yeah.
Number six.
Six.
The 1-2-3 Kid versus Scott Hall, May 17th, 1993. Again, this was, you can kind of put this mainly on Scott Hall for doing the job to X-Pac.
Yeah.
Getting his friend over. But what a stunning, amazing finish. And especially back then, the 1-2-3 Kid, the one thing that he was fantastic at is just straight up wrestling.
Yeah. Like, even though he was one of the most won. He was a jobber.
He was one of the most exciting guys in the ring at the time. And he got a surprise. This is like a roll up.
Yeah,
right?
He did a top rope move and stayed on top for the cover and got the win.
Yeah.
And massive shock to the audience. I think it was a pretty short match, matter of a couple minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rematch, of course, is when there was that botch on the outside and landed more or less head first on concrete.
Whenever I see that, I get a headache.
Yeah, man.
Oh, God. Ugh. It's really surprising not more people have died doing that stuff.
I know.
You know, especially when there's no mats on the outside.
I know.
Oh, God.
I know. It's pretty surprising.
remember that time Jordan Devlin, you like literally see
his brain in the back. Skull, essentially. He had a huge gash in the back of his head.
It's like, my God.
What, the edge of his head just hit the corner of the ring, right?
I think so, yeah. Like
around the apron?
That's horrifying.
The back of his head open. Ouch.
Anyways, yeah, of course, that made a huge star out of the 1-2-3, or made a star out of the 1-2-3 kid. It put him on the map for sure. And, of course, he had a great career, and he still has a great career as a
X-Pac!
X-Pac and Six and Pac and a couple other things.
1-2-3 kid.
What did he call himself in TNA? What did he call himself? It was something other. It was like Six-Pac. I think it was Six-Pac.
Yeah, because he was six in
right.
WCW.
So he just like threw them all together.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. So anyways, but yeah, that was definitely a memorable Raw moment and a fantastic performance.
Yes.
1-2-3 kid. Number five.
Five.
Ric Flair. This came in a TLC match versus Edge. January 16th, 2006. This comes hot off the heels of the live sex show.
Which, of course, came hot on the heels of Edge cashing in Money in the Bank for the very first time against John Cena, New Year's Revolution, becoming WWE champion.
Yeah.
Flair interrupted the live sex show the previous week, led to this match.
Mm-hmm.
Flair, like he often does, came to this match with a head wound. Seemed to be in various states of his career.
Yeah.
Permanently with a head wound.
Yeah.
And very quickly, he was bleeding from said wound.
Mm-hmm.
I believe this is the first time Ric Flair was ever in a ladder match, but he acquaints himself really quickly.
Yeah.
Matching Edge for the better part of the match, spot for spot. He takes an absolute beating from Edge, gets a concerto, gets put through a table, bleeds everywhere.
How old was Ric Flair during when this match went down? Let's see here. He was born in 1949. So 56 or so. Yeah. Almost, yeah, 56. And he was Ric Flair at the time. I actually watched a bunch of this run because it was fascinating to me, and I always wanted him to, like, you know, it was a great story. Mm-hmm. It was less than two years later, that he ended up being retired. Oh, just over a year later, actually. When was this again? This
2006.
January 2006. Okay, wow. So, no, it's over 2 years later. He ended up retiring against HBK, retiring from the WWE against HBK in a classic match. He was one of the best performers that the WWE had at the time, at the age of 56.
I know. He would still bump all over the place.
He would bump all over the place,
bleed everywhere.
He was putting on phenomenal performances to close out his WWE career. I mean, you sort of bleed the WWE from the WCW that whole time, you know, before he was like in TNA and stuff. But my God, he was putting, and this is a fantastic match. He had this entire crowd into it. Charlotte was sitting ringside.
Yeah.
And you could see, like, his whole family was really into it.
They're
like,
Charlotte, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So the crowd was super into it. Edge was just the biggest son of a bitch ever.
Yeah, and the whole, you know, the idea that Flair could win the world title for the 17th time.
Yeah.
That was all the story.
That was all out there. Yeah. And it was like, it's one of those things where, if only he would have won it. And I know this served a story. I understand.
It elevated Edge's
heel. It elevated Edge big time. I understand all that. But could you imagine the pop that I'm always a fan of? If you know you have a crowd, if you know you have that moment and you can just blow the roof off the place
and
pull the trigger. It was kind of like when we were watching the Jeff Hardy Undertaker match.
Yeah.
That crowd was so into it. If they had just pulled the trigger.
That's why I always have an issue with the Hell in a Cell match between Sasha and Charlotte.
Right, yeah.
That's in Sasha's hometown. If she would have won that match, especially in dramatic fashion, that building would have exploded.
Oh, I know. It always kind of, I mean, I totally get the concept of, you know, you want to build up more heel heat. But in my opinion, just in my opinion, there's a million ways you can do that without robbing a fiery crowd.
I know, of a huge moment.
Of a huge moment, exactly. Because it's not like they're every week. They're, you know, they're relatively
few and far between, that's for sure.
Exactly. Let's see here. Next, number four.
Four.
Lita. This comes against Trish Stratus, who also put in a fantastic performance. The first time the women's division main evented a Raw, it was December 6, 2004. A match that, according to, I forget, Sasha Banks, maybe? Bailey, I forget who.
Oh, they still show at the Performance Center.
For a time, they still showed it at the Performance Center. And it really sort of laid the groundwork for, you know, 10 years later, 12 years later, whatever, when Sasha and Charlotte were main eventing Raw. And I mean, now they main event, now the women's division main events on like a regular basis.
They just did this
past Monday.
This match was fantastic. Lita just about broke her neck during this match doing a suicide dive.
Oh my God, she rolled herself up backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was scary.
On to Trish. Nonetheless, great performances from both Trish and Lita.
Mm-hmm.
Super memorable. And as you said, they still play it at the Performance Center to this very day, mm-hmm. in terms of showing how to wrestle. Captivating match full of storytelling and wonderful in-ring psychology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it was fantastic. Really good match. Lita was like one of the best, dude. Oh, she was like one of my favorites. All right, let's see you next. Number three. Seth Rollins. This just happened.
This is one that just happened this past Monday, February 19th, 2018, for those who are watching it in the distant future.
Oh, yeah.
For reference, in case there's
evergreen another episode.
In case there's another stellar Seth Rollins performance on Raw.
So leading up to this...
the previous week, he said he wants to be the man.
He wants to be... Yeah, because prior to that, he had just been sort of relegated to guy who might be trying to get Roman Reigns over. They had him going back with the Shield. What was he doing before they put him back with the Shield? So at WrestleMania, he fought Triple H. And then
he really wasn't doing much after that.
Yeah, they don't like.
It wasn't until the Superstar Shakeup happened.
He was kind of doing some stuff with Samoa Joe a little bit.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah.
And then Superstar Shakeup, Dean came back.
Mm-hmm.
They had their storyline, got back together. Dean got hurt. Jason Jordan
was
partnered up with him. He got hurt.
Just a whole lot of. And it's funny because you kind of take Seth Rollins for granted a little bit.
Yeah.
But you always go back to, he's one of the best wrestlers they have.
As evidenced by his performance on Raw this past week.
Absolutely. And so when he, Jason Jordan unfortunately got injured, but it did clear a path for Seth Rollins to come out with, and say to Kurt Angle, I want it to be Monday Night Rollins again.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be the man.
Yeah.
And it only took 1 week for them to put him in this gauntlet match, and he lasted an hour and
5 minutes.
In 5 minutes, beat Roman Reigns and John Cena
back to back,
in an absolutely stellar performance. And the thing is, granted, yes, it's predetermined, it's fake, whatever you want to call it, but being able to tell a story between two opponents. For an hour and 5 minutes, the way he did, the amount of cardio that entails, the amount of stamina, rather, that entails, the strength that entails, it is, there's a reason this dude, is fit for this, because he does all that CrossFit stuff.
Yeah, he's CrossFit Jesus.
The CrossFit Jesus, man. Not just anybody can do this. Like, very few people can put on a match like this.
And the fact
that
towards the end of the match, after he's been in the ring for roughly an hour, he more or less deadlifts John Cena to give him an AA. He also does the suplex Falcon Arrow combo,
right,
which demands a lot of strength.
Yeah.
The fact that he does that stuff after wrestling for already an hour, super impressive.
This single-handedly put him back in the main event picture.
Yeah.
He should absolutely be added to the Universal title scene.
Not just added, he should win it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
How about this? I just thought of this. What if he's put in that match, wins it, and that's the catalyst for Roman Reigns to turn heel?
It'd be great. It'd be perfect. I'd love it. And then Brock Lesnar rides off in the sunset.
Yeah, he has a retirement match against Braun Strowman. Yeah. Braun wins
and eats Brock Lesnar live.
There you go.
I'm going to eat you now. And everybody's like, oh, that's funny. And then he's like.
No, it's one bite.
Oh, just like it's like the cartoonish bone, chicken on bone like thing, or turkey leg.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
That'd be weird. This is a fantastic, fantastic performance from Seth Rollins. Everybody's still buzzing about it.
Yeah, we talked a lot about it in our Raw recap we just did earlier.
Yeah, it was like an hour. Yeah, it was weird because that match, it was one match for 2 hours.
And our podcast, which was by and large focused on that one match, was an hour and a half.
Yeah, we talked to 30 minutes about Jeff Jarrett's 2-minute Hall of Fame video. So that's our show. Number two. Triple H. This, of course, came when he tore his quad clean off the bone.
Yes, during a spot in this match where he was tag teaming with Stone Cold Steve Austin.
The two-man power trip.
Taking on Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit.
Yeah.
Took place May 21st, 2001.
Many people call this the finest match in Raw history.
Mm-hmm. I remember it being all over the place. They fought in the ring, outside the ring, on the announce table, everywhere.
And, of course, the moment late in the match, when Triple H comes in and tries to, I think, break up a submission, maybe a Jericho submission on Austin, maybe.
There's a clothesline diving and he tears his quad.
And then, of course, after the fact, they go back and you can see it in slow-mo, the muscle just ripple.
Yeah.
That led to an 8-month or 9-month absence from the ring, and he came back bigger and better than ever to a rousing ovation. But the fact that he tore his quad and then still...
Finished the match.
Finished the match. He got put in
a lion tamer, right?
Lion tamer. Like every move you shouldn't do after that, that will completely kill you.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah.
In service of the match.
Yep.
I can't think. I mean, Triple H, say what you will, he is one of the most dedicated. Like, I can't think of a person more dedicated to professional wrestling than Triple H who understands it. I mean, we both, you know, talk him up quite a bit thanks to his work in NXT, mm-hmm. what he does behind the scenes. As an in-ring competitor, he does have a reputation, especially during the mid-aughts of his reign of terror,
yeah.
when he was burying all sorts of people, which I kind of think is overblown. But you cannot say the guy didn't have the most gutsy performance wrestling the finish of the match with a torn quad against Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic yep. match. And everybody turns that and says, look at Triple H. Number one.
One.
John Cena and Shawn Michaels, April 23rd, 2007. This match went over an hour.
Well, just under an hour.
Just under an hour.
A rematch from their match at WrestleMania 23.
Yeah.
Where another classic match. John Cena picked up the win, retained his WWE championship.
Mm-hmm.
This was a non-title match, but in this case, Shawn Michaels picked up the win over John Cena. I believe this happened 6 days before a pay-per-view.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So kind of reminiscent of the Seth Rollins situation mm-hmm. where he just wrestled 65 minutes, 6 days before Elimination Chamber, which I'm sure he'll be in the ring for at least a half hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I hope they give Seth some time off this week.
I hope he's just chilling out this week.
Yeah, I hope right now he's at home in Iowa
mm-hmm.
playing some Madden
yeah.
on the couch,
yep,
icing up his body where it hurts,
yep.
and just taking some time off.
Tranquilo.
Relax.
Exactly.
Anyway.
It's probably on a house show tonight, though.
No, there's no house shows for Raw on Tuesdays. And
oh, Wednesday, really? Okay.
Days off. I believe so, at least. But anyways, back to this match. Great match. Took place in London. It's very rare you see a match go this long without it being some sort of Iron Man type match.
Yeah, a lot of people... So I thought this was actually an Iron Man match, but apparently it's not.
I don't believe so.
Interesting. Yeah, because how, I mean, an Iron Man match, there's like a number of pinfalls that you have, right?
Well, you have a time limit. You have like yeah. 60, 30 or 60 minutes.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But this just happened to go an hour.
Yeah. This too is also considered one of the greatest matches in WWE or Raw history. I mean, the crowd totally, it's funny too, because when you watch the rest of Raw, it's kind of a mess. Cause I remember watching, I went back and watched this and I was like, good Lord, there was a lot of garbage in 2007, but then it finishes with this match. I don't know if this was the main event.
Yeah, it was.
I think, yeah. Okay. And it's absolutely stellar. I mean, John Cena, we've said this before. John Cena can put together a 5-star match.
Yep.
He can do it. I mean, he has done it.
Yeah.
And this is one of those situations where, you know, it would be difficult not to call this that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, John Cena also, when he's on cruise control, it's really obvious that he's on cruise control.
See, Survivor Series last year.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But no, absolutely stellar match. I watched this a little while ago, so it's hard to recall the particulars, but I do remember being pretty blown away
mm-hmm,
by it.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
Yes, there you go. The two gutsiest performances, or the two best performances in Monday Night Raw history, go to John Cena and Shawn Michaels.
Yes.
But all of these people are fantastic.
Great.
Yeah. Anyways, that's it for Countout. Thanks so much for tuning in. Till next time, we'll talk to everybody later.
Bye.